welcome to another exciting edition of The Thought Police. I'm Mike Graham, and here's
Kevin O'Sullivan.
There you are. Now, I've been seeing much of you this week because, unbelievably, they've split us up, haven't they?
Yeah, we're ships that pass in the night now. You work in the middle of the fucking night.
Well, I wouldn't call it the middle of the fucking night. I would call it prime time. Yeah. 9 to 11, ladies and gentlemen, just in case you've been wondering.
I call it pub time.
But, you know, I was actually looking forward to not seeing you every fucking morning, but actually I quite miss you. You know, it's quite funny.
It's a horrible realisation.
Yeah.
I think we've become fucking addicted to each other over the years. And
I know.
It's a habit we can't break.
Well, I will see you every day. It's like I said to you, we did Plank of the Week last week, and Chuck was like, oh, well, nobody's seen you on screen for a while together. And I was like, are you joking? You know, like, apart from every fucking day.
Absolutely.
But anyway, you're having a good time. I'm having a good time. And we're still going to be on the Thought Police, of course.
Yeah.
And Pooch, funnily enough, has suggested that we do a Christmas pub cast.
Yeah.
So we're trying to put that together.
Yeah. Definitely. I think what we've got to up our game on is we're going to do more live shows, even if they're the smaller ones in the pub.
Yes.
And we'll try to get some big shows together as well.
Yeah.
So more of those in the upcoming months and year.
Yes, indeed. And we should be doing a bit more patient stuff as well. But it's just been really, really difficult. But anyway, here we are, smack bang in the middle of all sorts of scandal. We'll get onto the political stuff later on. But should we start with the lovely Carol Vorderman, who's finally been sacked after I said she should be weeks and, well, I think, probably months ago when she turned into this kind of rabid anti-Tory maniac.
Yeah, she suddenly became that, and she's become this sort of massive, vehement critic of the Tory government. Her last tweet was, Rishi Sunak's a total cunt, and every other fucker in the cabinet is a motherfucking shower of shit.
Yeah.
Something like along those lines.
Yeah, sorry like that. But honestly, is this okay for the BBC?
Yeah, but seriously, her tweets aren't much better than that. They really are vehement,
vicious. And also,
tweets.
Did she not have, I think this might have been the straw that broke the camel's back. There was one particular government minister, can't remember which one it was, it might have been Greg Hands, I'm not sure, but she had to retract a load of stuff. Because she accused him of all manner of things, corruption, and it was all cobblers, right?
Yeah.
So she had to make this mealy-mouthed apology and delete a load of tweets. And so I think that was the beginning of the end, when if you were at the BBC, albeit BBC Wales, which is quite a big organisation, because, you know, we've all worked in various parts of the country, they must have gone, crikey, this woman's a fucking loose cannon. We'll either have to tell her to rein it in, or we'll just have to get rid of her. And I think, to be honest, they're better off getting rid of her.
I think that's what's happened. She's trying to frame it like this. That the BBC Wales have told her, you know, that you're breaking social media rules and, you know, you've got to be careful. And that she's decided, well, she said, I must have my voice. I'm going to carry on. So she's trying to, like, frame it that she is kind of impressively walked out because they're trying to curtail her, silence her and her important tweets and all that. I think the truth is that BBC Wales have said, your fucking tweets are way beyond the pale. You are hereby fired.
Yes.
So she's been fired. But the question is she has been fired for tweeting the sort of stuff that Gary Lineker, that other BBC star, is allowed to tweet.
But again, this shows you the BBC still don't really know their arse from their elbow.
They fucking
because
don't.
At the time, I remember when I was asking the question, why is Carol Vorderman still allowed to do what she does?
Yes.
Their view was, and I can't remember who told me this, but the BBC's view basically was, well, it's a regional programme, it's a music programme, it's not really a political or it's not a news programme, therefore she's okay. Yeah. Well, apparently not. So they've changed their tune again.
Yeah, I know. And but it was put to me by an old BBC stager today, actually. So I said, well, how come she's got the fucking arse and Gary Lineker hasn't? He said, well, it's just this. Gary Lineker is much more important to the BBC than Carol Vorderman.
Yeah.
So they let him get away with stuff because they don't want to lose him. They don't give a fuck about her.
But I would imagine that there will be people inside the BBC, because I listened to that interview and he was quite interesting, that guy, because he also said, inevitably, what these people don't realise is that what they do is actually bad for the BBC.
Yes.
Because it's bad for the BBC's image to have these nutty kind of lefties tweeting, millionaire lefties, I should say, tweeting about how ghastly the government is. Particularly when you see Gary Lineker, who was very quiet, was he not, on October the 7th?
Still hasn't said
much about Israel.
Yeah.
Still hasn't said. I think he's tweeted a couple of times
about the marches.
In support of the marches, but he's not really said anything about Hamas or Palestine or Israel, you know, which is unfortunate.
And let me tell you about those marches. I keep droning on that. I've been to two, and I'm going to have a look at this one.
Which hostelry will you be frequenting?
Yeah, I'm going to go to a clash cocktail bar to watch the next one.
But
they
left,
are interesting.
Yeah.
Gary Lineker tweeted, "I hardly think it's a hate march if they're all calling for a ceasefire. It's a peace march." When you go to these marches, you don't see a whole lot of ceasefire. It's all free Palestine.
Yeah.
That's what it's all about.
And they're shouting from the river to the sea. Everybody knows what that means. And lots of
annihilate
people.
Israel.
And we've seen lots of signs that are, in my view, borderline illegal. But the police do nothing. But the thing that I really find amusing. Yeah, well, the thing that I find amusing is that all these people who appear on various different shows, whether it's on our network or somebody else, is saying, oh, the thing is, you can tell that these are very peaceful marches because hardly anyone's been arrested. Well, hardly anyone's been arrested. You know, it's like putting the cart before the horse.
Because the fucking police don't do their
That's
job.
Because the police aren't arresting anyone. It's got nothing to do with the fact that there's no law breaking going on. It's the fact that they don't want to fucking arrest people. It's as simple as that.
Yeah, and it's so ridiculous to have police forces around the country, but particularly the Met Police, you know, basically going, well, if we arrest people, there might be trouble. Well, your job is to arrest people who break the fucking law. And a lot of law breaking is going on in these marches.
Yeah.
A lot of jihad chanting, from the river to the sea, when will Palestine be free? Free Palestine. Essentially, that is a call for the state of Israel to be annihilated.
Right.
These are calls to violence. They are illegal. The police's approach is don't arrest anybody.
And also, these are the same people who are walking through central London. If they see any of those signs, which are hostage, posters for the kids who have been taken hostage, they rip them down. If they've got a can of spray paint, they'll spray paint something. If they see a poppy seller, apparently they'll attack them. People are now saying they're frightened to sell poppies on the streets of Britain, which is a fucking disgrace.
And stations, they're terrified. Yeah, that poor old guy, 78-year-old war veteran.
Up in Edinburgh.
Punched to the ground by a pro-Palestine supporter in Edinburgh station.
And also there were those old elderly people in Waterloo last weekend who were surrounded by these sort of thugs. Yeah, and all these Palestine flags. Britain is a very weird place at the moment. Particularly London. I mean, I was just walking into the building here today and I walked past a load of kids who were coming out of some kind of college, rather, and all the girls were wearing veils, right? And not one of them was wearing a poppy. Not one. And that's what's going on in this country.
Yeah.
I had a conversation with an MP this week who said, I'm not surprised by what's happened here, because in the end, Britain is now a divided country between people, many of them are young, and they're not all Muslims, they might just be young students or whatever, who have no interest in British heritage, no interest in wearing a poppy, no interest in thanking their elders and betters for making the world that they live in safe for them. Mm. They just go, fuck you, you're all wrong, you're all horrible old bastards, and you're all fucking basically war criminals because you bombed Dresden. I mean, that's kind of the main sort of point that they think.
And we're war criminals because we support Israel, because Israel is retaliating.
Because it's an apartheid state.
Those fucking cunts Hamas did on October the 7th. That's what's going on. Yeah. Israel is defending itself. It's got every right to do it. But these marches, they are a kind of indication of what critics call as the sort of Islamification of Britain.
Yeah, totally.
You've got 5 million Muslims. How interested are they in this country, in Britain's interests? Mm. Are they interested in that, or are they interested in turning this into a country that is ruled by Sharia law?
We've seen what's happened in the north of England, where several council leaders have quit the Labour Party as Labour councillors, having been elected as Labour councillors, on the basis that they don't like Keir Starmer's policy on the ceasefire.
You know,
that tells you all you need to know.
Exactly right. And
that's the other problem for Labour, because Labour have now got a whole bunch of front benchers who are beholden to minority interests who have got them into Parliament. And they're now being told, you better fucking stand up for us. And
that's
a very interesting time to be a politician in this country.
Yeah, I suppose we should put our cards on the table so as we don't look like idiots should events overtake us. We are recording this a couple of days before
the planned
Armistice March. Now, today, on our time, which is Thursday, Suella Braverman's got a article in the Times in which she says that the trouble with the police is they play favourites with demonstrations.
Yeah.
In other words, she says, do you remember the lockdown demonstrations, the anti-lockdown demonstrations?
Yeah.
The police were down on them like a ton of fucking bricks.
Yeah.
Do they treat pro-Palestine marches the same as Millwall fans? No, they fucking
don't.
The police are biased, they're left-wing, and Suella's got a point. And what does Downing Street put up about her article? They said, we didn't approve it. We don't give a fuck whether you approved it or not, you stupid cunts. She's saying what a lot of people agree with. And if Rishi Sunak, if he sees anything that might be popular with the electorate, he fucking stamps on that as soon as he can.
Well, I don't think he knows what's actually popular with the electorate. I mean, can you
the King's speech?
In, yeah, of course she does. In the midst of all of the turmoil of the Middle East, in the midst of all the nutty stuff that's going on with the migrants and the boat people coming here every fucking day by the hundreds, he decides to make out that we'll all be much better off if we get some more oil and gas in the North Sea, have some more driverless buses, and lock a few more people up who have already been locked up, but for a bit longer. And you're going, is that it?
Yeah.
The fucking King's speech was an absolute crock of shit, wasn't it?
So boring as well. And fucking...
The King's dump, they should have called it.
And then you get this police chief, the Met police chief, Rowley.
Yeah.
You know, you and I slightly differ on this Armistice Day march.
Yeah.
I'm against it. I think I agree with Sunak. It's disrespectful. Yeah. I think it's fucking horrible on Armistice Day. However, I do think we should allow it. If you have the right to protest... You have to let it go ahead, unless
public safety.
Exactly, if public safety is at risk, that's his call. Now he says that the reason he's allowing the march to go ahead is because the threshold for trouble has not been reached. Well, you've got Tommy Robinson, you've got a lot of far-right groups saying they're going down to protect the Senate. They're going to be looking for fucking trouble. I don't know what his threshold is, but he's going to be in the shit, if you ask me.
And also, there's an awful lot of people who are rejecting this far-right kind of narrative that people are putting out. Baroness Warsey is the one who said it. You know, football hooligans and far-right Nazi types are going to go. There's a lot of ordinary people.
Yes.
I mean, I've met a couple of service people, right, who have said to me, my regiment, one particular one that I know quite well, my regiment is actually going, has been invited to the Cenotaph for the first time ever,
so
he says, I want to go, but on Saturday there's an event at the Tower of London, and he said they've all been advised not to wear their medals, more or less being told, unless you absolutely really have to wear it, don't wear your uniform while you're getting to the venue.
That's obscene.
Put it on when you get here.
That's obscene.
Now, I'm sorry, that to me, it's got nothing to do with far right. It's got everything to do with the fucking
decent people,
scumbag fucking narratives that are being put around by people like Baroness Warsey, who doesn't fucking know her ass from her elbow. Who's talking about, you know, this is a woman who claimed for a second home when she lived in Kent, you know, while she was in the House of Lords. Yeah, well done, Baroness. The bottom line is that a lot of people don't want to see London being taken over by a load of fucking free Palestine types. I'm sorry. That's just not what we're fucking here for.
No,
certainly not this weekend.
Absolutely. And as I say, I believe that in principle, this Armistice Day Palestine march should be allowed to go ahead. But I think the reality of it, from what we've heard so far, when Mark Rowley says there's no credible threshold breached, you must be fucking joking. I mean, I'm no expert. You're no expert. I don't know about you, Mike, but I'm worried about what's going to happen in
London. There's
no
question. There's no question that London and the centre of London will not be a safe place to be on Saturday.
And if that is the
And I'm not going to be here because I'm going to be out of town. But, you know, if I was here, I would not be going into the centre of London.
Well, and on that basis, that London may well not be safe on Saturday, then I agree you can't let a march go ahead that will affect, threaten public safety.
Yeah.
You can't do that. So when fucking Rowley says there's no threat, I don't know what the fuck he thinks he's talking about.
Well, this is a guy who's quite happy to fucking send a load of cops down to a load of women in Clapham Common, you know, demonstrating and throw them to the fucking ground. What was the threat there?
Yeah.
Were they worried that the women were all going to get up and start, you know,
it's
shouting at them or something? I mean, there was literally no threat at all. Also, similarly with the, you know, with the BLM bollocks, you know, where they're getting down on their knees.
They're taking just a fucking knee.
Shortly before having bottles thrown at them, and they let that one go ahead, you know. I mean, it's just ridiculous. They don't seem to know. And I've heard so many of these kind of defenders of the police going, well, of course, it's the law. They have to adhere to the law. Well, there's plenty of barristers who've told me that the law does allow them to stop the march. The law does allow them to arrest more people. They don't need more powers. They've got all the powers they fucking need. They're just too scared to use them. Yeah,
it's on his head.
And we all know what will happen. If it does turn out that, you know, there's a bunch of people that turn up at the Cenotaph, some of them are defending it, some of them are shouting Free Palestine, they'll attack and arrest the people defending it.
Yeah, exactly.
The white British people who are defending it, they're the ones that will get arrested and they'll be called far right and they'll all be locked up.
Yeah, make no mistake, this is how it goes. The police are pro-Palestine. They are their left wing, and Mark Rowley is speaking for them. That's his fucking problem. And I'm going to ask you this. 2 weeks ago, two Saturdays ago, there was a big pro-Israeli event planned for central London.
Yeah.
Guess what? Mark Rowley banned that.
Oh, yeah.
He banned the pro-Israel.
Oh, well, I guess that one reached the threshold.
Yeah, yeah. And so then they said, okay, can we have our demonstrations 7 miles away in Golders Green, right, where the Jewish community live?
Right.
And Mark Rowley and his boys said, oh, no, that's too close to the pro-Palestine march. Why not ban the pro-Palestine march? Right. Let the Israelis march.
Also, the idea,
I'll tell you why, because he's a fucking lefty.
Yeah, and the idea that, oh, they're not going to go anywhere near the cenotaph when they're literally marching from Hyde Park to Vauxhall. It's literally a fucking stone's throw from the cenotaph, and if they want to go there, they will. And I don't believe that some of these people who are very pro-Hamas types are not going to go and cause trouble because they want to.
Well,
and I said this the other night, you know, what if during the 2 minute silence a load of Free Palestine people show up and start chanting Free Palestine? Two-minute silence.
Exactly.
What's that going to do? Is that not enough of a threat? Also, the police calling for evidence. You're going, what, so you want evidence of something that hasn't happened yet?
Yeah.
How fucking stupid are they?
Well, he's just towing the left-wing line, the pro-Palestine line. And I think, as I say, you've got to stress, we don't know what's going to happen on Saturday. But I'll tell you this, Mark Rowley is not sleeping well right now, and he shouldn't, because his conviction or his contention there'll be no trouble on Saturday. Fuck. You must be fucking joking. You must be fucking joking.
The idea that they can predict that it will be fine is hilarious to
me. Yeah.
Absolutely hilarious.
And Sunak has obviously called him in on Wednesday afternoon to number 10 Downing Street. Very rare event.
Mm.
He's obviously said, all right, mate, you say this march can go ahead on your fucking head, be it.
Right. Well, we'll see how it all goes. Yeah. Hopefully it won't turn into a mass brawl.
Yeah.
But it wouldn't surprise me. You see that one over in America where they had a theatre called the Museum of Tolerance, bizarrely. Where they were going to show that video, the horrible video. They showed it to some journalists here of what actually happened on October the 7th. Mm-hmm. Basically, it's the Israeli government's version of all of the videos that were put out, and they put them all together in one. And because the Hamas types were so incensed that a lot of Jewish people had gone to see this video, there was a mass fight outside the theatre in the Museum of Tolerance.
I know.
And I mean, this is happening now in places like Los Angeles, Paris, London. You know, people are fighting each other because of Israel and Palestine. I find it really bizarre.
Well, it's anti-Semitic.
I find it really odd, though.
That old Jew hatred is rearing its ugly head again, and we know where it can fucking lead, so we all need to be extremely careful. Can we talk about the big, big, big story of the week, then?
Come on.
John Lewis,
the Christmas ad. Yeah.
It's got a fucking Venus flytrap in it.
I heard you say that.
Yeah.
Why are you so worried about Venus flytrap?
Well, because they're very cruel to the Venus flytrap. Little boy gets the Venus flytrap and he grows it and it gets very, very big. And he kind of wants it to be their Christmas tree, but the family kick it out in the middle of the fucking snow.
Right.
Venus flytraps can't survive in the snow, so it gets all cold.
Well, why do you care?
Well, because I want them to bring the Venus.
You now care more about plants.
I don't fucking care.
You know, I mean, I understand you care about animals and dogs and all that, but fucking plants, I'm not having it.
I suppose so. But anyway, the point is, I like the advert. It's traditional. Yeah. It's sweet. It's a family. And here's the fucking thing, Mike. You won't believe this. The entire family are white.
Yes. That is a bold move.
I think maybe
people are seeing this bullshit trend and saying, look, we don't need to do that.
Yeah.
Let's do this instead. Let's actually represent a British family who aren't mixed race, who haven't all got different shades of colour of skin. You know, because nobody does it anymore.
Yeah, we're obviously skating on thin ice here, but I don't believe it's racist to sit when you look at some of these TV ads for Christmas to go, hang on a second. There's a family sitting around that table with a turkey in the middle. You've got a woman in a hijab. You've got a Sikh in a turban.
Yeah.
You've got a bloke in a fez. You have a black guy. You've got a white person. It's like, what the fuck kind of gathering?
As you said, the United Colours of Benetton.
Yeah, well, why are they all having... Why are the United Colours of Benetton? Why are they all having a turkey? Why are they also having Christmas when half of them aren't Christians?
Right.
So those adverts are weird. So what I like about the John Lewis ad this year is it is a return to sort of traditional values, And it's a plausible family at Christmas.
Exactly. I'm sure there are people that celebrate Christmas in all parts of the world.
Well, yeah, they do.
And if you want to, you know, represent that, that's fine. But, you know, I think there's been this obsession with making out that, you know, everybody's British. I mean, I had some lawyer on the other night who's of Asian origin, and he said to me, "I hope you think I'm British." And I said, "What do you mean? Why would I not think you're British just because you've got brown skin?" It's ludicrous. Yeah. The way the fucking world has gone, it's absolutely nutty. But you've been going to theatre as well, so I want to hear this.
Oh, yeah. So for older listeners,
yes.
For younger listeners, there was a fantastic character used to write for The Spectator and The Sporting Life. Back in the sort of 70s and the early and the 80s, and he was called Geoffrey Bernard, and he was a famous fucking piss artist.
Right.
And so he filed a weekly.
And he hung about Soho.
Yeah. He filed a weekly column to The Spectator, but he was always pissed, and he was always missing his deadline.
Yeah.
And when his column didn't turn up, it was called Low Life. They just used to put Geoffrey Bernard is unwell. So, brilliantly, a guy called Keith Waterhouse, who was a drinking mate.
I knew Keith, yeah.
Yeah, good guy. It was a drinking mate of Geoffrey Bernard, turned this into a play called Geoffrey Bernard is unwell.
Yes.
It was in the West End, and Peter O'Toole played him.
Yes.
And it's the true story of when Geoffrey Bernard woke up in his favourite pub, the Coach and Horses, in the middle of Soho at 4 a.m. in the bogs.
Right.
He'd gone unconscious about 10 o'clock, and he got out and he couldn't get out of the fucking pub. So the whole play revolves around him phoning the landlord going, "Norman, where are you? Where the fuck are you? I've got to get out of your fucking pub." And then turning around and going, "Well, I suppose there's worse places to be locked up in," and hitting the optics.
Again.
So brilliantly, they've recreated this funny play. And they've done
it. So is that it? It's just set in the pub?
They're actually doing it in the Coach and Horses.
Oh, are they? Okay.
So I went to the Coach and Horses this week to see the play. It stars a guy called Robert Bathurst, who was in Cold Feet.
And they're doing it upstairs?
No, it's in the pub.
Oh, it's in the
pub. So you just go into the pub, buy a drink, sit down, and then suddenly you're from the other side, "Go the fuck out!" And then in comes Robert Bathurst, and it goes for about an hour and a half, and it's great. Really good fun.
Oh, that's really good. They can't get too many people in the pub, though.
I suppose 200 or something.
That's
maybe.
A lot.
Yeah, I mean, they carefully put the chairs around.
Okay.
And people sitting at the bar and everything, and just wandering amongst us.
Wow.
It's a good show.
That sounds like quite a good thing. It reminds me of a real story, though. I'm not going to name the person, because I think they're dead now, but it was a famous story when I was at the Express with a guy who went out, and it was a Friday night, and I went to the local wine bar, and you know, everybody got pissed, as they always did. Anyway, next morning, his wife, who normally was expecting him to be very pissed when he got home, wakes up and he's not home, and she's thinking, "Where the fuck has he gone?" You know, he's either ended up some floozy, or he's fucking, I mean, it wasn't unusual, completely unusual for him to get home, but she started ringing people up and asking where he went, and nobody knew. So eventually somebody said, "Well, I think the last time I saw him, he was lying down on one of the banquettes in the wine bar, because he'd, you know, had too much to drink." And so I think
I know where this story's going.
So they break on Saturday, nobody's around. They raise the owners of the wine bar, and they break into the place, and he's still lying there. And they try and wake him up, and, you know, he's not very fucking, you know, alert and everything. And it turns out he'd had a fucking stroke, right? But he'd had a stroke the night before at the bar, and everyone just thought he was so pissed that he couldn't stand up. And so they literally just laid him out on the fucking couch and left him there.
So I mean, you shouldn't really laugh.
I know, but it is funny. No, he had to be rushed to hospital. And I think he did recover. I'm not sure if he's still alive these days. But fucking hell.
Well, Johnny pissed again.
It shows you how drunk people used to be, that you would literally go, Christ, well, look at that.
This is it. These are the stories of the golden days of Fleet Street.
Yeah.
Geoffrey Bernard is unwell. I remember once when I flew down to the Cannes Film Festival with a mutual friend of ours.
Yeah.
Who might not work far from where we are right now. We got completely fucking arsehole.
Yeah.
We got on a plane at like 9. I met him about 8.
Right.
We got on a plane about half past 9. Started drinking on this plane in the morning. Got to Nice Airport, still drinking. Got to Cannes, checked it into our hotel, and went straight to the bar there. It's called the Waterman's Arms, right by the Palais de Film, the palace where they have the film festival.
Yeah.
So we started doing that. Anyway, which just was the biggest fucking piss up of my life. And I don't really remember what the fuck happened, but I have a vague memory.
Just kind of go for days.
We were lying there. I remember about 6 p.m. we were lying in the middle of La Croisette, challenging cars to run over us, and so on and so forth. But, you know, at the back of my mind was this slight fear. I said, fuck it, I'm supposed to be working, you know, getting stories. I'll do that tomorrow.
Yeah.
So I never did. So we got absolutely fucking arsehole. And in the morning, I woke up. Christ knows when we started, 2 in the morning. So woke up about sort of 8 in the morning, going, fucking hell, feeling like death, and thinking, oh my God, I'm going to phone the fucking news desk. They're going to go, where the fuck have you been, and all this. So I phoned.
Because they couldn't reach you.
Mobile phones. Yeah, yeah. So I phoned the news desk, thinking, hello, mate, great story. I go, what? Brilliant story. What are you talking about? So I filed something. I filed a story in the middle of the day,
right,
which was all over page 3.
Wow.
About some film that was coming out.
Just goes to show how brilliant.
Forgot all about it.
But this is the thing. I mean, we can all do these things, and you know, I think you do worry that now journalists can barely write their own fucking name. Never mind actually be thrust into some mad world where you have to drink for 24 hours. I mean, I genuinely thought when I first went for a job up in the Star in Tarrytown. And they gave me like 3 shifts, and on the third shift, it was the day they went to press. It was a weekly paper, and so everyone went right. We went to the pub, so I went, all right. There was a few English and Australian guys there, so it was all Fleet Street types. Went to this pub called the Mustard Seed in Tarrytown, which is where apparently there was a Frank Sinatra dinner theatre where some mafia boss was buried underneath Apparently, it was quite a famous town just outside of New York City. And we went to the Mustard Seed, and one by one, the office called to call people back. And I thought, well, I'm not really even working there really properly. But eventually they fucking rang to get me back. And I came back and I was so drunk. I literally couldn't. And they gave me a story to do, and I was kind of going, and it was so old, these typewriters, right? And my fucking fingers were going through. I just literally couldn't type anything. And this guy came up to me, and he said, you might as well just go home. I was like, yeah, okay, I think I should. He said, do you want to come back next week? I was like, yeah. He's like, good. He said, you're quite good. You can drink a bit as well. And that was it. I mean, they didn't go, you fucking drunk.
You can drink a bit. You can drink a bit, but it transpires you don't know when to fucking stop.
Well, this is it. But the point is that nobody gave a shit in those days. I mean, it was perfectly acceptable. But you can imagine now, like, staggering around drunk, going out for lunch, coming back 2 days later.
Years ago, when I first started at The Sun in Fleet Street, back in the 80s, the then news editor, God rest his soul, great guy, Tom Petty, and his deputy, Bill Newman.
He died just recently, didn't he?
Yeah, Tom only just died recently. Great guy, really great guy. Mm. Anyway, him and Bill, I'd started as I was the showbiz news reporter.
Yeah.
Big job on The Sun,
actually. Yeah.
Anyway, so I'd started. I'd been there about 3 days, like Wednesday. They said, oh, it's about time you came out for lunch with us, you know, show you the ropes. I said, yeah, okay then, yeah. So we went to the wine press.
Mm.
And, you know, after about an hour, I'm thinking, is there any fucking food involved in this? I mean, they fucking bought bottles of Clara.
Bottles and
bottles and bottles. I'm not kidding you. In about an hour and a half, we must have got through 5 bottles or something between three of us.
Yeah.
And on and on they went. And when we came out of the wine press, they sort of marched down Fleet Street. Come on then, Kev. I was literally fucking hanging off a lamppost saying, I can't fucking go back now. So Tom goes, all right, mate, see you tomorrow. He's the fucking news editor.
I know. This is the trouble. And that's why we have such a capacity for drinking, which is why I'm sure it's not that good for us. Because at the end of the day,
and I've heard doctors say.
Well, this is the thing, you know, because for me to drink a bottle of wine is fucking nothing at all.
I mean,
it just doesn't even hit the size. Doesn't make me drunk. Doesn't make me tipsy. Nothing. You know, I only really feel it if I've had two.
Yeah. So a bottle of wine to you and I, if you drank it yourself, that's like other people having a glass of wine.
It is. It really is.
You put your capacity for
booze. I've taken to putting ice in it at home. I was telling you this the other day.
Because
you drink it, actually goes a bit slower. But I mean, it's no skin off mine. If I go home after the show now at 11 o'clock and I just sit up until about 2 fucking drinking.
Yeah.
You know, because there's stuff going on. There's stuff to do. There's shit to watch. You know, it's been part of our lives for such a long time.
Drinking,
I can't ever imagine not drinking heavily.
Absolutely.
I just can't
imagine. It's a way of life, folks. You know. By the way, this is the best joke of the week.
Go on.
The COVID inquiry. Yeah. Sir Mark Sedwell, who used to be Lord Civil, now, yes. He used to be the cabinet secretary.
Sort of head of the civil service.
When it was in the middle of the COVID crisis, and Matt Hancock kept locking us down, Sidwell just sort of said to everyone, the fucking guy's a sort of inveterate liar. He just keeps lying. Anyway, he recommended to Boris that he fired Matt Hancock because he's a useless fucking liar.
Right.
But he said, so a mate of his, Simon Case, who was to follow him into the job of Cabinet Secretary, said, why is it that you want Matt Hancock to be fired as Health Secretary? And Mark Sedwell said, to save lives and protect the NHS. And at the fucking COVID inquiry, he apologised for that good joke.
I know.
It was gallows humour.
But this is the trouble, isn't it? They're all apologising and saying, oh, we didn't think this was all going to be published. Well, maybe you should have thought about that in the first fucking place.
I mean, that's the thing about the COVID inquiry. I'm wondering what the fuck the point of it is. But it's fucking entertaining.
It's a much more entertaining fucking thing to watch than it ever was watching those god awful press conferences.
Next slide, please.
That was a fucking terrible time, it really was. But yeah, I mean, it's kind of, you don't want to be proved right on these things, but it's absolute fucking proof that we were right to say this is a fucking shambles. None of them know what they're fucking doing. We shouldn't be listening to them. We shouldn't be fucking doing anything that they suggest because it's all coming. They might as well pull it out of their arse.
They were making it up.
What should we do now? Oh, yeah, I tell you what. Only let people go back to the pub if they sit down.
Yeah.
And order a drink from the table.
Yeah, fucking get shops to put arrows on the floor. Yeah. So you have to follow the arrows.
Yeah, make sure that if they're going to order a drink, they have to have something to eat.
It's fucking shit they made us do. And then we find out, not to anyone's great surprise, that they had no fucking idea what they were doing.
No.
And this is what I hate about the COVID inquiry, why it is just a waste of time. It is not looking into whether or not lockdowns were justified.
No.
It presupposes lockdowns were brilliant.
Yeah.
Well, that's ridiculous. They
and
were
wrong.
Shit.
And
they were
wrong.
Shit.
Yeah, they were a fucking waste of time. And so is the COVID inquiry. Unfortunately, the only two things they've got in common, though, are that they'll both cost us fucking billions of fucking pounds. And they'll just keep taking our fucking money in order to tell us fuck all that's of any use at all.
And what's it coming out today also is that the AstraZeneca vaccine may have been quite harmful to quite a few people.
To some people,
under 40. Now, the thing I always thought about the vaccines, I think, oh, it's brilliant, but what was the old Boris, it was a world-beating, game-changing, all
like
that.
Like the man who wanted to inject himself with COVID.
Yeah, and blow a fucking vacuum cleaner up his nose to kill the virus. Anyway.
Well, he had to take it off the end of his cock first.
Yeah, exactly. So we learned that the AstraZeneca vaccine might have been dubious, to say the least.
Yeah.
But I always thought, you know, I have to go along with, oh, they were great, the vaccine saved us all. But I always thought... Well,
yeah, I never said
so
that.
So when they said to us, take the COVID vaccine, you won't get COVID. Okay, oh, wait a minute, you will get COVID.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, so it doesn't work. Well, take it because it will stop you passing it on to your granny and killing
her. That's not true.
Wait a minute, it won't stop you doing that. Well, so why the fuck should I take it? Well, to stop you dying.
Yeah.
Well, I'll take your word for it, but... And ask any doctor.
No, I think there's no question.
Ask any doctor. These were very weak. They might have worked to some extent, but they were very feeble.
I think they worked, but I think the problem is they didn't work for everybody. They were probably quite dangerous for some people, and some people shouldn't take them. But they didn't know, really, enough about them to tell us that this was the answer.
And
that's where they got it wrong, because I think what they should have said was, you know, these are things that we believe will help you if you don't want to die.
But that's
not how they sold it.
Yeah, but the vast majority of people, it's only about like 0.5% of people who are ever likely to die of COVID, old people and vulnerable people with you know, diseases and things like that. The vast, vast majority, more than 99% of us never stood a chance of dying.
I know.
COVID. So when they say, take the vaccine, it'll stop you dying, well, I wasn't going to fucking die in the first place.
Well, it's a bit like saying, take the flu vaccine, because it will save your life. Well, it might do, but if you fucking get a bad reaction to it, it might fucking kill you. Simple as that.
Yeah.
Anyway, we've reached the end of yet another episode of The Thought Police. We will be back with another one next week. It might be later in the week, just because of the way things are at the moment. But we hopefully will be back.
We'll get you one every week,
very
promise.
Possibly in the pub doing some filming.
Yeah.
But I know we keep saying that, but we'll do it soon. Anyway, don't do anything fucking stupid.
Fuck you all.
And if you go to that march, don't be a cunt.
Yeah, don't be a cunt. We'll be right back.
Thank you.